Linux Out Loud is firing up our mics, connecting those headphones as we search the community for themes to expound upon. We keep the banter friendly, the conversation somewhat on topic, and have fun doing it. This week, we're down a host, but don't worry, Matt and I will talk about all the hardware. Let's get into episode 87. So while Nate's busy having fun in the sun, we're stuck inside, but that's all right. Both of us have got some fun hardware stuff going on this week. What do you have?
Hardware always makes the world go around and more fun and more interesting.
Yes.
So anyway, who knows, is recently I've been buying a lot of hardware. And I mean, hardware. And this is after I spent like 2 years dwindling down to bare essentials. Funny how that works as a technology fan. So
you go in cycles of like, I'm decluttering, I'm getting rid of everything I'm not using. And then it's like, holy crap, I need more stuff and build back.
Yeah. Eventually I'm going to get through that. Okay. What use do you have point? But I haven't gotten there yet. Right. Everything at the moment has a use.
Has a use.
Whether or not it stays that way. That's another story.
Right. Yeah.
But so anybody who knows, I bought a MacBook. So there was that. That was that piece of technology for a very specific travel reason, for my trips back home and just kind of battery life and a lot of very esoteric reasons.
Right.
This one, this thing sitting back here, is the 1X Player Mini Pro Black Edition, because I have the white one. This one has Wendy the Rainbow Vomit that you're not going to care for. but this is the 32 gigs. It's basically the exact same spec model as the white one that I have, which currently runs Chimera OS. The problem with that, Chimera OS only plays well with AMD GPUs.
Oh.
Be it the ones that are in the system or external GPUs, which is actually behind the PS5. But unfortunately for me, I have a NVIDIA card.
Right. Yeah.
So I have been experiencing Windows on a handheld. And, you know, I talk a lot and I give Linux a lot of flack about how we rely on the command line and UX, user experience consistency, et cetera, and UI consistency, et cetera.
Yep.
Windows, this thing that is currently being piped to, does not have any of that. Windows out of a company that has had almost a quarter of a century to figure out touch interface, I still don't understand how they haven't figured out touch interfaces. So, like, you log in with the keyboard. Cool, whatever. I don't.
Yeah.
That's fine. Uh-huh. Whatever. But with the virtual keyboard, whatever.
Right.
Because that's how, you know, these are supposed to be portable gaming consoles, essentially. That's how they're built. Mm-hmm. And it brings up the virtual keyboard. Cool, whatever. Log in. That's fine. I don't care. When you have to make a hardware-enabled specific workaround in order to break up the virtual on-screen keyboard for it to actually be used. So on the right joystick underneath it, if you tap the top button, it brings up the built-in Windows on-screen keyboard, like the one for accessibility and stuff.
Okay.
There's only one small problem with that. It's a free-floating window. So instead of expanding across like a proportionate amount of the screen, like a virtual keyboard normally would.
Right.
It's a floating window that you move around. So there's no integration of the keyboard into the actual OS.
So that makes absolutely no sense to me, because Microsoft bought SwiftKey, which SwiftKey has been one of the most amazing keyboards for Android. I don't know if they have it for Apple, but one of the most amazing keyboards for Android, highly customizable, being able to choose height and all of that stuff. Accuracy on it is amazing. So it's not like, I know it's Windows and not a Google app or whatever, but like they already have something mm-hmm. that works that they could use to help make that mobile experience better.
See, and this is the slag I've given Microsoft specifically for you guys had a 25-year head start. You guys had tablet PCs, the mm-hmm. turn around, fold them with the old like Lenovo and ThinkPad series.
Right.
You had UMPCs, which were the small ultra portables back in like the mid-2000s. You had netbooks. You've uh-huh. had 2-in-1s. You have had
a whole line of surfaces.
A whole line of Surface devices. The only UI and UX that you guys could figure out was between the Zoom HD, Windows Phone 7, and the front portion of Windows 8, until you gave Windows 8 an identity crisis.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Which was Windows 8's biggest flaw, mm-hmm. because it wanted to be, they couldn't stick with something. So they had to try to please everybody, and you're going to please nobody.
Nobody.
And that's what they did with Windows 8. And when they killed it off, they kind of forgot about the smaller form factors because they abandoned the phone market. And then when they did go back to the phone market, they went with Android.
Right. So, well, I mean, to be fair, I did use a Windows phone for a very short period of time. Actually, we kind of bought the Windows phone to get out of a mobile phone contract because they were like super, super cheap. So we could trade in our devices and buy these ones outright. So then mm-hmm. we could walk over to the next place, which I don't do mobile contracts at all anymore. But we could just walk over to the next place and get a service provider that worked better for us. So
yeah.
Really, it was that very, very short time period where I used a Windows device and the UI just wasn't my jam, but there's that.
Yeah, the live tiles and all that stuff. You either,
yeah.
love it or hate it kind of UI, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
It's a bunch of Windows. Ironically, Windows, they showed a bunch of different various windows. It's almost like they might have an idea of how to do window management.
Here's the thing. Like, I have showed what my mobile desktop looks like before, and it's very plain. There's very, very little on it. I don't have a bunch of apps on top of it. So that kind of UI to me feels cluttered. It feels overwhelming. It's just, mm-hmm. like I said, it's not my jam. So
no, but so my point is, like, you think with that much of a head start, though, they would figure out some type of integration.
Right. Right. You'd think, but they dropped out of the phone market for a reason. Yeah.
So they still have the 2-in-1 devices that are touchscreen devices.
Right. Yes. Yeah. They have a bunch of them that are specifically hardware made by Microsoft.
So the fact that you still drop the ball on that is mm-hmm. amazingly stupid to me.
Right.
And then when Windows can't figure out how to manage its own windows, that's the other thing. Hello, software is fun. I'm running Steam in big picture mode because I just don't want to deal with the headaches of Windows. So it's kind of like some of the headaches in a default bad Android skin. You just wanted to hide it to make it go away. Mm. Kind of what I've done. Unfortunately, sometimes the game, because I'm running Steam in big picture mode, Steam big picture mode overtakes the game window in Windows. So it becomes the default. So you have to actually be able to go down into the Windows taskbar and flip over to the game. Whereas that's in Linux, say what you want about Linux and games and all the other stuff, and it doesn't do easy anti-cheat, but for the love of God, it can figure out window management. When your product is named Windows, you are terrible at managing them.
So are you saying that this experience has made you A, like Chimera OS more, and B, made you more appreciative of the things that Linux does?
So, and I want to be clear, I still have a Windows system, like an actual right. Windows computer, besides that. It has reinforced everything I've thought, said, and thought about since the Steam Deck came out. And I'm not saying this as a Steam Deck fanboy. I'm saying this as a UI UX person that I enjoy, for the most part, consistency. And I still call out stuff that I don't like. But for the love of God, this is a square peg round hole using the triangle to bash the square through the hole.
Well, it has a lot to say on the Steam Deck when Nate, too, is very, very, I wouldn't say anti-Arch, but he does flip it quite a bit of crap. Tons of love for OpenSUSE. You could say that he might be a little obsessed with it.
No. There's no little. He is totally obsessed with it. And it's not just a somewhat unhealthy obsession. It's an unhealthy obsession.
And for him to be like, you know, I really don't want to mess with the way this works because it works so well and everything is so fluid. I think that has a lot to say for the work that Valve has put into that device. Without a doubt.
And I agree. And there, to be fair, SteamOS and that stuff, it has its issues.
Right.
They try selling these, though. The problem that I have is it's like a school that's overgrown. Mm-hmm. And they just start plopping down the outside modules that don't coalesce with the building that the school is in.
Right.
So it just looks crappy.
Yeah.
You know, all those exterior, like very, the temporary buildings, as they would normally call them, at least the where I went to school is, and my school had a lot of them. And it was so you had the main school, uh-huh. And then you had other stuff that was still attached to the school, but it didn't look like they looked at.
Oh,
I can't say
we had a bunch of those too, and both. Not so much elementary school, definitely a ton of them in middle school and junior high. Mm-hmm. Ended up building a new high school. But yeah, you have classrooms that are basically these like miniature mobile homes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It all ties to the same thing, but they're their own thing.
Right.
And that's how they try to integrate all the exterior stuff of like different launchers and different, mm-hmm. all the other stuff is very third party. It kind of goes with the building, but not really.
Right.
And yeah. At least with all the tweaks and all the weird stuff you can do with a Steam Deck or Chimera OS and all that, it integrates into the same building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's my biggest complaint about Windows. Like, I could care, because I view these as a piece. I view these as a console that happened to do some PC things.
Right.
And that's really what they are. If you're looking at it from a PC, you'll deal with it and you'll deal with Windows issues. But the love of God is these as a console and a Windows as a console OS is terrible.
Mm. And it's not like they can't do consoles because Xbox has been around forever.
Same amount of time. How can you not figure out a UI? Now, I'm not going to say, like, I have Xbox One X. The Series X sitting next to me. I'm not going to say it has the most fantastic UI. It feels feels like the PlayStation UI. It feels very ADD on what it wants you to focus on.
See, my kids have an Xbox One first generation, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't say it's my favorite user interface, but I can find stuff, right? They can play their games, and launching their games is probably pretty easy, like way easier than sometimes installing games is where it can be a little weird or clumsy, that kind of thing. But for the most part, like once you have a game installed and you just want to launch the game, that on that seems pretty straightforward. I haven't played with any other Xboxes. I didn't have Xbox growing up as a kid. I played on a Sega, so I'm a little sheltered that way. It did some Nintendo, but for the most part, at home, we had a Sega.
But so that's been my experience. If you want to view these as a Windows PC first, you'll get your money out of them.
Right.
If you view them as a console that happens to do some PC things, you are not going to enjoy the experience because it is not based around thinking of it as an appliance.
Yeah.
And it is a Windows 7-inch Windows tablet with controllers bolted on that you cannot remove. That is legitly how it is.
Fun. Sounds fun.
Terrible. Terrible. I have other words to describe this, but terrible is the most family-friendly I can use. I will give Windows one thing. The eGPU switching is actually fairly good.
Really? That's been the only upside of that device or that OS, yeah.
Once it gets a little weird because you have to understand how to do it. But basically, if you don't have AMD stuff already and you're going to NVIDIA, go to their website, download their crap, install it. The one caveat is because most eGPUs, you do go to an external screen, not the built-in screen, because then it creates a loop back and it's like delayed and input delay and all. It's just kind of annoying. When you go to an external screen, shut off the iGPU within Device Manager. Like, actually disable it.
Completely shut it down. So that means before you take it off the dock or whatever, you need to turn that back on?
So no, Windows will default back to it.
Okay, so if you restart it, you're good.
Yeah. Because it disables it. It doesn't uninstall. I don't uninstall the drivers or any of that stuff.
Right.
Because Windows will still detect the screen as that as the screen. But that is the one caveat, because I was getting a lot of weird, like, hey, I would, be playing a game and all of a sudden the game would just go to a blue screen because it disconnected the eGPU for some reason.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah.
I don't know. Conflict in drivers, I'm assuming, or something.
Yeah, probably.
So if you're going to do eGPUs in Linux, it's kind of the same deal. Download like NVIDIA Optimus Manager QT or whatever, and just always go to, if you're going to be on your NVIDIA machine, just go to NVIDIA and leave it set to that. That's right. Just kind of how I've gotten to it. Or you can say, or if you have an AMD, whatever. That is the one plus. But once that's done, it's literally, I drop it in the dock, plug it in, eGPU fires up, switches right over to NVIDIA. No problem. Okay, cool. And don't get me started on controller support in Windows. Oh, that's bad. So while I've been bashing my head through Windows, apparently, you have actually been swapping out and upgrading things and new portals of viewing, apparently, as well.
Yes, all the things. So I have been able to get my hands on a Gigabyte RTX 3060 Ti. This is an 8 gig card, and I did the swap. And one of the dumbest things that I did, forgetting, I don't know how I forget about how horrible NVIDIA graphics drivers are, I swapped out the card before doing a DaVinci backup. So I did lose some project files because I did end up going to complete black screen, having all kinds of issues, not being able to get back in.
In fairness, that's not a NVIDIA problem. That was an end user problem.
I totally didn't do my due diligence in backing up because I am not a Michael. As soon as hardware shows up, I do not have the self-control to not put it in. Like, once it's here, I have to use it. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I got to play with it. I got to check it out. So I got it installed. I ended up reinstalling my Manjaro system, got DaVinci reinstalled. All of that's working fine. One of the biggest differences that I've noticed so far with running DaVinci on NVIDIA was that first boot was like, hey, we've got this AI stuff that DaVinci can use now. So do you want us to go through and do the check and set up for that? And I had to do that. Performance-wise, I really haven't noticed too much of a difference. It does allow me to do the H.264 and the H.265 codec now. But if I go to the dedicated click on YouTube, so it'll just export for YouTube kind of stuff, it's not sending sound with it. The first time I did it, it worked fine. And now there's absolutely zero sound when it exports that way. So I have H.264. But I can't use it on an MP4. That doesn't work. I have to drop down to an MOV, and then I can still export as an H.264, but that file size is so much larger than if I just use a .mov. I mean, gigabytes larger between the two. So I'm still playing with it. I'm still trying to figure it out. I did have before a Radeon RX 6750 XT overclocked with 12 gigabytes of RAM. So I have lost some RAM in the process of this. And I showed screenshots to you, Matt, of this running. And for the most part, as I was exporting stuff and just doing the day-to-day things, it was running fine. Of course, that was all when I had three 1080p monitors and only one 4K monitor. And the other upgrade that happened was I took my daughter to town for art stuff. We came home with art stuff and three 27-inch 4K monitors.
So I want to be clear. I am not the only person who does impulse buying when it comes to my technology.
Well, here's the thing. I had been thinking
You guys give me crap constantly about buying hardware.
I do. But it is for editing purposes. It is specifically for editing purposes. Not that it doesn't look beautiful. I shared a picture in our show notes with you of what that setup kind of looks like. But the biggest thing was color. So I had one monitor, the Dell, which was at least 10 years old, maybe 9. You know, it was somewhere in there. Still, I mean, a really high quality, great monitor that I got. I had another monitor that I got for Christmas. To my left, my Samsung 32-inch curved was in the center, and then I was using a TV, old TV, that's also like 10 years old, up on top. So it was doing a decent job, but I was having issues with color consistency across the thing. I was having to take my 4K monitor and make it 1080p, so I didn't have like really, really tiny stuff on the 4K, and then it goes like super big on all of the other monitors. It just helped it match. And things still looked great on my 4K monitor, even though I had it set to 1080p, but I was ready for some consistency across all of my main working monitors. And so I'd kind of been back and forth. I'd been looked at them, but the thing is, I'm actually really cheap. And so to go ahead and pull the trigger and buy them had been really, really difficult. I had walked into a local store. I had seen these monitors and they were on sale. And I was like, do I get them? Do I not get them? It was kind of back and forth. The girls and I went and played with some keyboards there and like looked at different keyboards and that kind of thing. And then I went and looked at the monitors again. I was like, forget it. Let's just go and get your art stuff because we know we need to get home. We've got other stuff to do. So we went to the art store. And while we were in the art store, I ordered them for pickup. But I just couldn't, like, they are 27-inch monitors, which I was really hoping to stick within the 32-inch range. But 27-inch is still a decent size. The thing that I liked about them is they were 4K, and then they had 95% of the DIC P3 color space. So I might have to drop a chart of color spaces in here, but sRGB is kind of like the smallest color space a device can say that it has. And if it doesn't have at least 100% sRGB, like just don't go there. Don't even, it's not worth it. So this expands the areas in both the blues, greens, and reds in which that it can read. And they look fantastic. So, of course, I brought them home. Magneto met me at my vehicle when I got home to help unload some stuff. He opens the door. He's like, what are these? And I'm like, well, they are monitors.
So wait, Magneto was near technology.
Magneto was near technology and they still work. Yeah. Yeah, they still work.
Is he losing his touch?
Maybe he actually has used these monitors so far, but I mean, he did use all the other monitors and they still work. So it kind of depends on the technology and how much he's actually touching it, I guess you could say. So I immediately, like I said, I'm not a Michael. I immediately started tearing things down, putting new monitors up. Here's the other plus side of getting these three monitors. The kitchen system now is back up and running again. The kids' system in the living room is off of the TV and on its own monitor, which is extremely important where my younger daughter, who is in robotics, is now wanting to learn CAD more. So she's actually spent quite a bit of time on CAD since that now has a separate monitor. So instead of like looking up at the TV trying to do CAD work, she can actually sit with a monitor directly across from her. So those two systems are, one's back up and running. The other one now has a dedicated monitor, which is nice. So now if the kids have game time, someone can be on the computer and someone can be on the Xbox at the same time, instead of that needing to be like, I want to play a game on the Xbox, so you have to wait till whoever's playing the computer game is done. Just kind of frees up gaming environments too at the same time. So I'm happy about that. We are able to retire the old TV. The TV's been mounted like since we got it, and I don't even know where the feet are. It potentially could be put somewhere else in the house where, I don't know, I'm completely running out of space. Like, my whole house is crowded with crap that needs to go find another home. But those are up and running. So I will drop a picture in the video version of the show, and maybe in the show notes we'll see of what this setup kind of looks like. The one that I have shared with Matt right now in our show notes is me editing the pseudo show. So I've got the three 27-inch monitors across the bottom. If you remember that I got that four monitor stand, and up top I have my 4K 32-inch curved monitor. It works really well. It looks really, really nice. But I did run into my first snag with that lower RAM graphics card. Like, the day-to-day stuff is still running fine. I edited pseudo show just fine on this 8-gig graphics card. But I was trying to push four 4K monitors and then play Phasmo in 4K, and I was hitting like max on that graphics card. It was starting to panic, things were glitching, and I was like, okay, so I need to drop the game out of 4K and back into 1080p, which it still looked fantastic, but not playing games in 4K where it is also pushing four 4K monitors.
Yeah, well, so here's the thing. I have a 3070 with 8 gigs of RAM as well. Mm. And I don't need, and that's a, granted, it's the laptop variant, so it's about the equivalent to a 3060 Ti.
Right.
That has a 4K screen bolted to it as well. Mm-hmm. I don't even attempt to run games at 4K.
Yeah.
With one monitor.
I had the green with Envy NVIDIA app over to the one side as I started to play, and I was like, looked at the numbers, and I'm like, ooh, we're hitting like 98-99% GPU percentage used, and watching like glitch, 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 and I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll tone that down. But otherwise, it's all working fine. I have to say my favorite part about the NVIDIA graphics card over the AMD graphics card, I know I'm jumping all around, but welcome to my ADHD. my favorite part about that change up is the fans in the NVIDIA graphics card are so much quieter. I still have the same crazy high ramped up fan curve that I had on the other one. It's incredibly so much quieter, and I don't understand why. I have used graphics cards from the same company, just a different, like AMD versus NVIDIA. I don't understand why they're quieter. I don't know, but they are. Mm-hmm.
So I've used both. Those that don't know, Wendy got the 3060 from me, so we'll just put that totally out there. This is a three fan 3060. Like, this is a beefy 3060.
It's
like,
a
this
beefy is a full card.
Bore. Three fans. So you would think noise level wise that it would be fairly high when the fan level. It's not. I've used AMD cards. I've used NVIDIA cards. I've kind of been all over the place. AMD cards. If you start ramping up the fans, you will know.
They scream. Yeah, they scream.
Mm-hmm. It keeps them cool. I'm not going to say it doesn't, because the Vega 64 that I had was, you knew the fans were on, but it kept it cold. But NVIDIA, like, you know, I have a game like right here. This has got the highest RTX stuff on, so it's like ultra quality and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not hearing a peep out of the eGPU from it. And that's because this gives it like all the sway in the trees and all that. Like,
right. Yeah.
I'm not hearing a peep of complaint. And granted, it's a static menu for the most part, but still, like, if that was an AMD card, I'd definitely be hearing some fan noise.
Right. Yeah. You turn it on. And like you said, I purposely have a higher fan curve, a more aggressive fan curve on my cards. And the AMD card that I pulled out of here, that 6750, I had like the exact same thing. It also has three fans on it, but it was definitely way noisier. And I don't know why. I don't know why they're one's quieter versus the other, but it just is. Yeah, it just is.
So that must be taking a little getting used to, because you can hear like, now you can play mom more because you don't have the fan curve to hear as much. So you can hear if the children are, you know, doing
well. The only problem is when they are quiet. So if I don't hear them, that's when I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? I got a story for you after the show about an incident that happened yesterday while Magneto is out of state. He's in Nevada and I'm sending him pictures. Look what? Guess what? They're your boys.
I don't know. that could be very interesting. My biggest question is, because you use core control for AMD, right? For like your GPU and stuff. How are you finding core control versus green with Envy?
Really, for the most part, I think I like green with Envy more. And the biggest reason why I do is it's the stats on the card that I like better in the green with Envy. It's pretty straightforward. I can look over at it and see what my usage percentage is. I can see what my power pull is, all of that stuff. And for someone who is A, concerned about keeping things cool, B, wanting to make sure that I'm not overstressing the card, and I just like to geek out with those numbers. Are they something that I have pulled up all the time? No, but especially when I'm running a new card, playing with a new card, even if it's new to me, those are all things that I want to see. And I knew I had quite a bit of overhead in general with the power supply that I have in here, but it's always nice to know that I'm still have buffer room, that I'm not hitting that danger zone of over pulling on power.
Mm-hmm. So the one, because I have core control pulled up right now, the one thing that I can say, that I kind of do like with green with Envy, is you can see the fan curve that you can change almost on the fly down in the bottom, the Windows-esque kind of like measurement of like, here's your 8 gigs of RAM in this case.
Yeah.
And it gives you the number, whereas core control will give you all that, but it gives you like the giant, like, here's the fan curve history and like the load history. And it's like, I don't really need all of that when it comes to like specifically my GPU. What I need is like, where am I at? What's my thermals at and all that kind of stuff. And the thing I like with core control, it's more compact in a window. That's my biggest thing. But
the only thing is I wish I could put them down as a, not an app. What are these called down here? Widgets. I wish I could put that down as a widget in my, menu, not menu bar, whatever in the heck this is.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? Yeah. In the task manager, because I have my CPU and my memory as little graphs down in there. It'd be kind of nice to be able to keep track of my GPU in the same way as I do those two things. Yes, I have to keep track of my RAM right now. That's something that needs to be replaced. It's kind of the next thing that's getting replaced. Is, you know, I'm right now running at like 20% RAM usage with multiple windows open, rendering and all of that stuff. Even more so, like having four 4K monitors running has definitely kicked up how much RAM I'm even using, I've noticed. And so that's kind of one of the next things that needs to get replaced. And so I do like to keep a really close eye on that, because sometimes I am hitting that 95, 98% RAM used. And the nice thing about Linux is, you can go ahead and add like the virtual RAM, right? But having that dedicated actual RAM, I think, is definitely more important. So that's the next thing that's coming up, the next thing that's getting used or replaced, used, whatever, words are difficult. But I started looking into RAM in general, and it seems to be harder to find that DDR4 RAM right now.
So a lot of that, I think, has to do with the new switch over to a lot of the new chipsets. I think a lot of them are DDR4.
And all that DDR5
is becoming a thing. So it could be like when we went from DDR3 to DDR4.
Here's the thing, like, I still was able to find DDR3 RAM when I needed it. Of course, like, you were buying it sometimes from very specific companies. So the computer system right now is one of those minis. So it actually uses laptop RAM. Mm-hmm. But that old Dell system still uses DDR3. And I know, mm-hmm. like, the one that has access to the kitchen system, that was given to me. And from that guy, I also bought, like, an identical system for my in-laws when we were setting up their computer, and there was a bad RAM stick in theirs, and I was able to purchase a RAM stick for that system and replace it. Of course, that's now also been 4 years ago. It was 4 years ago that I replaced that stick, because I know it was 2020 when we built that system for my in-laws, which is still running absolutely amazing, by the way. And I mean, it's running an old, I think, i5 or maybe like second or third gen i5. Not new by any means. And the one in the kitchen, I think, is running a gen 4 i7, something like that. But I mean, heck, that system, now that it's working again, that's mostly being used for, like, streaming some videos, watching some stuff on Twitch, you know, like, it's not like it's getting these massively heavy workloads. And for those cases, being able to replace those parts in it is kind of nice. Now, if the motherboard dies, I don't know that I could be able to replace that, and I might need to repurpose that machine in general for, like, a mini other system. I was thinking about it today that when I do go ahead and upgrade my CPU and motherboard, that will probably head over to the kid system. What's in the kid system will probably go to the kitchen system, and we'll just do like the rotation of hardware through the house and then recycle whatever at the end of that line.
Yeah. No, that's definitely interesting to always see. Tech is interesting in general, though.
it is. And the thing is, that's kind of crazy to me, is tech for the most part is moving fast. I don't think it's moving as fast in the last maybe 10 years, 5 years as it has, say, previously. But it's pretty easy to see that, okay, I bought this thing this year and now it's outdated, or I bought this thing like 2 months ago and now it's outdated compared to whatever this new thing is. But then if you're looking at the real world aspects of how that hardware is getting used, there's no reason to throw it away, because the CPU that the kids are using in their system was from a pre-built that I bought 8 years ago. And it's running amazing. It's doing all the things they need to. It's playing the games. It's working in CAD. Granted, they're using Onshape, so that is CAD inside of a browser. But it's doing all the things. It's running perfectly fine. And it's so easy to get caught up in the there's a new thing, when really there's no reason to upgrade. But I say that knowing that I would love to have like the 3080 or 3090 instead for increased RAM in my graphics card, right?
Yeah, I hear you. So, like, anybody who knows me knows I am a cheapskate. I am a cheap, cheap, cheap person when it comes to my tech. I will avoid spending as much money as humanly possible, and if it means I gotta scrounge for a deal, I will somehow find one.
Find it, so
my main editing rig and the show that and when we used to record and stuff for a long time was a second gen i7 Elite Book.
Mm-hmm.
And I still use that as a gaming machine up until like 2020.
Right.
That machine came out in 2011. So that machine got over almost or just about a decade of use.
Right. Solid use, hard use. Yeah.
So literally the only, Ryan hates me for it because I had to replace the GPU twice, but there's just certain things I don't want to do, and that's one of them.
Right. Yeah. And it makes sense. Like, I mean, when I built this system, I was building it for the fact that I definitely wasn't replacing key components minus the GPU for at least 4 to 5 years, right? That was the goal in mind when I built it.
And I think, honestly, despite being tech enthusiasts and all that stuff that we are, I think sometimes we do get caught up in chasing the dragon of the new shiny. Really do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love technology. I will be the first to admit that I will go and buy crap I don't need, probably, or I could probably live without. I will be the first to admit it. But on the same note, I will be the first to say that as a consumer, you don't need, most people, you really don't need the new shiny. Like that Elite Book, I was editing 1080p. I mean, granted, it's only 1080p, but I was doing 1080p 60 on a 10-year-old system.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
With an upgradable that you could upgrade the GPU up to, I think it was a Quadro M5000M, which equates to about a 1080.
Yeah, something like that. And that was the nice thing about that laptop, though, is it did have an upgradable GPU, which I wish more laptops these days had, other than Framework. I know a Framework does, but it seems like all the rest of them anymore are soldered in. Yep. There is no upgrade.
So you can be cheap, because I can tell you, the upgrade to prolong that machine that long, the upgrades were stupid cheap.
Yeah. Like, it really didn't cost you that much on those GPU upgrades. Yeah.
Literally the first GPU was the equivocal of a GTX 470. Like I'm like, oh, I upgraded to essentially a GTX 760. When the support fell out of that, I upgraded to essentially a GTX 970, 980. Their mobile edition, the Quadro editions.
Right. But
the cards themselves, the 760 variant cost me about $35 at a time when GPUs were stupid expensive.
Yeah. Right.
And then the 960 was about $70, or the 970, 80, whatever, was about $70.
Mm. Yeah. Not bad. Not bad at all.
To keep a machine going that, it had max RAM. It had a 4-core, 8-thread processor. For those that know what I mean when I say this, it had a dream color screen. So it was a 17.3-inch dream color screen, which sRGB and all the other fun stuff, 100% color accurate, and Blu-ray burner and all the jazz that you would want.
All that stuff.
So
granted, you weren't running with motion graphics on this machine, so
but
that does make a difference as far as editing goes.
It does, but it was a content creator. So if you were doing still frame color correction, or if you were doing color correction like in Resolve on a video, you start with that normal first frame of where you're looking to color correct. So for me, that was the important stuff. That's the stuff that I cared about. And that was not, so I think sometimes we do get caught up in chasing the dragon for the new shiny, though, which as much as we love it, we also sometimes get a little caught up in it and be the first.
There is a time and place to upgrade. It's just, you can get so much more life out of existing hardware that you own or buying used. They bought a lot of stuff used over the years for a steeper discount. And I know I'm kind of looking at when I do jump to a higher tiered NVIDIA card, I'm potentially going the new or the refurbished market. The downside for me is it's still baffles me how expensive some of those cards are. Like, absolutely ridiculously expensive.
$1,400, $1,500, yeah.
Right? Which is extremely frustrating because I will not pay those prices. Won't do it. Plain and simple. And that's not happening.
And you shouldn't. I mean, the only reason, like, I have the 460, the only reason is because I knew about the bandwidth limitations on eGPU. You're going to lose anywhere between 15 to 25% of the overall performance because there's a 40 gigabit limit through that cable to the external. So I have 128-bit interface, so it's a slower bit interface, but I have more VRAM, and more games are requiring more than 8 gigs of VRAM.
Yeah.
And that's really what it was for me. So, and, you know, nice little perks, yeah, sure, like frame generation and DLSS and all that stuff's cool, but that's not why I bought it. The $450 or $350 after some deals that I found that I spent on it still gags me when I buy it, that kind of thing. Because I remember buying a mid-tier, what would have been mid-tier, like desktop GTX 760, which was 4 gigs of RAM at the time, for about $200. And that was like middle of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Now middle of the line is $600, $700.
Yeah, yeah. And top tier, you're looking at $1,700 to $2,000. Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous. But you're not done with the Mac game. You've got a pocket Mac OS. Like, I kind of feel anymore that you're playing so much with the Mac stuff. What's up with this?
So I promote open source stuff that fixes problems with Mac OS.
Okay. This fixes
a problem with a Mac OS. So no, I believe it's called Poke. Which is the actual name, I believe the actual enunciation of the name or the app. It takes essentially the touch bar on the older Macs that have the touch bar, because that's the Mac I have, which has the capacitive touch bar screen thing.
Right, yeah.
As opposed to the function keys. This lets you customize the fun out of it however you want.
Oh, wow.
It's open source.
Nice.
Totally free. You can donate, or you can crypto it if you want, however you want. It's all up on GitHub. They make the actual touch bar on old, I believe from like 2016 to like 2019 MacBooks actually useful. So what I use it for personally is I'm a dock person. Like when it comes to like installing Garuda as an example, that's my preferred distro. Dock all the time. That I'm a dock person top to bottom.
It's the first thing I get rid of.
So in fairness, some of that has to do with me being a longtime Unity user. So that's just
would make sense. That workflow would be very comfortable. Yes, definitely.
That's just how my brain works, but or it doesn't work depending on how you want to look at it. The way Mac OS operates with the dock is super kind of annoying. And it just takes up unwanted real estate. It's kind of like if I'm in Windows, I always auto hide the Windows taskbar because it annoys me when it doesn't overlap window. Like it just sits there. Kind of what Mac OS does by default. So in order to change that behavior, I've literally taken that whole dock and shifted it down to the touch bar.
Ooh,
so now
nice.
So now my dock is actually the touch bar.
Heck yeah. Heck
so
yeah.
So I can poke, hence the name, at the applications and have that be my launcher for the applications and manage those windows and active windows like the dock would, just not on the screen.
And I'm looking at the name, and I'm glad you're saying that because I would pronounce it POCK, P-O-C-K. I'd pronounce it POCK.
So that's how I'm enunciating it. We could all be saying it wrong. I don't know, but It is a fantastic app because you can customize it with your, you can set up your own how you want to do it.
Yeah.
So if you want to different volume controls, function controls, add weather widgets, like insert whatever you want. And there, it's downloadable for macOS. Now, again, yes, I know I'm showing some macOS love on a Linux podcast. I've already talked about Windows for about 20 minutes on the podcast. It's supposed to be about Linux.
Might as well, so, right? I mean, this has an open source link though, right? Yeah. So there you go.
So that is why I liked this particular app, because it's open source and all the fun stuff. And it actually makes the touch bar useful. Something Apple was never able to do.
Yeah, which is probably why they stopped carrying it. I don't know. I've never played with a MacBook that has the touch bar, so it's not something that I've ran into. But I like the idea of being able to, if you've got it, customizing it and making it more useful for your workflow and your needs and the stuff that you need to access. Definitely.
So think of the best way you equate it to Linux is think of it as one punch shortcuts. Take the function row that you would normally generically goes unused most of the time in Linux, yeah, for the most part, for most users, and view those as each single one of those as an application launcher for a specified app. That's what that does. And that to me, and there's no keyboard combinations or anything. It's literally, I see the Vivaldi icon. I click Vivaldi. It opens Vivaldi.
And there you go. You got it.
I click the icon again. It minimizes Vivaldi. And the dock is not taking up useless space at the bottom.
Right. You have so full access to your screen and all of the pixels on it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my pick. Again, I know Mac stuff and Windows stuff on a Linux podcast, but you know, why not?
Open source, all the same.
But
open source on the Mac part, right? Not necessarily the Windows, but yeah, was more like, these are the things that I'm frustrated with that Valve got right.
Yes, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more than Microsoft will ever get right. But speaking of open source things, Wendy, you got a lot of different open source things going on, mostly for your caffeine addiction.
So what kind of got me started down this additional caffeine addiction, and I will say that I'm definitely a bit of a coffee snob. I like well-roasted coffee. I like coffee well-roasted brew. It's kind of like beers and wines and stuff. There's a science that can go into making a really quality product with really nice taste. And I like those little differences. And that can be the science between having the temperature right, the proper grounds to water ratio, all kinds of stuff. Like, I self-medicate with caffeine, but at the same time, like, I enjoy the experience of coffee from the brewing process and the drinking process. So we need a new coffee pot, because as we've been talking about old technology, our current coffee pot is at minimum 12 years old. It has had a few stints of times off where I've gotten coffee pots. They've worked for about 2 years and then they died. We pull out the trusty Cuisinart once again, and it's back on the counter doing the job. And it makes a decent cup of coffee. And it's now to the point that it's really, really old. Buttons aren't working properly. So if you want to make a full pot, you have to hit the 4-cup button, because that's the only way to make a full pot. And you have to turn the grinder off on it, because we don't grind from that. We actually have a separate grinder in which we use for our beans. And I've just been on this hunt for a new drip coffee pot. And in the process, I was like, you know, we're probably spending too much money in general at the coffee shop with all of the time we're spending out of the house, running back and forth to the robotics and co-op and all this other stuff. And I was like, I've got a mocha pot, but my mocha pot handle's broken. It's the second one that I've had, and I snap those plastic buggers off within the first 6 months. You know, they heat and cool and heat and cool, and I end up breaking them. So the one I've had for a while has the handle broke off of it. I was like, you know what? I'd really like to be making a true espresso at home. And so I went down the road of trying to find an espresso machine. And I think espresso machines are harder to find than good quality coffee pots because the expense for them is just so much more. And I had been looking at the Breville Bambino. One of the things that the Breville Bambino gives you is they have a PID for the water temperature. And that's really important in that science of things, the science of coffee, in order to make sure that those temperatures are coming up to the right brew amount before it is running through those coffee grounds, so you're getting the right extraction from the beans. And I was getting close to hitting the buy button, and then, you know, it was one of those like, okay, then I'm cheap at the same time and didn't want to go ahead and spend the money. So I bought a new mocha pot. This one is stainless steel. It's got a metal handle. Like, that thing isn't going anywhere. I'm not too impressed with the coffee that's coming out of it yet, but I'll play with it and get it figured out to get the cup that I actually wanted out of it. But that was kind of like a side, like I'm still getting not true espresso, but richer than I would be getting from a drip coffee pot. Why I continue to look for espresso machines. And I had been watching all kinds of videos and came across one that got me even more excited about getting a coffee pot. So this is a machine from Italy. It's made by a company in Italy. And I've heard it pronounced 1,000 times, but I'm probably going to mess up the name of it again. That the Gaggia Classic. Gaggia Classic Pro, one of those, like there's multiple ones that'll work, but there is a whole open source modding community around the Gaggia Pro, Gaggia Classic series, which is so incredibly cool. So this video that I found, that's definitely linked in the show notes, he goes through and talks about how you can do it from the ground if you want, like buy all the bits and pieces, follow the instructions, flash the firmware, and you're taking a machine that, yes, it's still an expensive machine, but it's very, very solidly built. It's using metal parts that are replaceable. Like, they are built to last. They are built to last you a really, really long time with replacement parts, and then you can take this additional software and add that PID process, add customizations for how long and how much pressure and all of this stuff through it. The guy who came up with the idea did not want this to be a money-making thing, but he saw that some people were offering like those pre-built kits, and there's some that are approved. I'm guessing the approved ones are ones that do have all of the hardware and then are not upcharging you a whole lot in order to get those, with an entire community around doing it. So that, I'm pretty sure, is going to be my espresso machine. It's not just the coffee, but I'm taking espresso and open source and DIY and making like DIY awesome sauce espresso.
Calling you a coffee snob would probably be an understatement at this point.
Yeah, yeah, I would definitely. So, like, I'm so picky, even about my drip coffee. I'm very picky about my drip coffee. Yeah, and it's not like I don't understand that other people in their house, you know, their coffee pot is their coffee, and for them, it's like you're just pouring a cup to wake up. But yeah, I'm like, ooh, that tastes gross. It's watery. It's, you know, burnt. Burnt coffee's the worst.
If I could literally get a direct drip, IV drip of caffeine into my veins, I would be totally fine and bypass the IV. I would totally bypass the coffee or the energy drinks at this point, because that is the only way I function at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, it's definitely still all about the experience, the flavors that's coming out in the coffee. You know, the way you'll have, and of course, I've got a glass of wine that I've been sipping on as we do the show, but you know, it's the same thing, that the smell, the grapes, where they come from, how it was made. Like, I love that experience with coffee as well. And then to find something that I can take two different sides of my geekiness and bring them together is just incredibly awesome.
I mean, you know, it'll give you something to do with more things, as far as, I mean, you're already doing a lot of open source stuff with like 3D printing and everything else. So Wendy, when can we expect you to buy said coffee pot so you can do 3D printing to DIY things for said coffee pot?
It'll probably be just a little bit. I've made some very large purchases recently, as we have said, talked about. So I need to got back up on some other stuff. The coffee pot itself is going to be the largest expense. Really, all of the bits and bobs that go to making a better espresso machine really aren't going to cost that much. So once I actually have the espresso machine, then we'll go from there. I would like to find one used. I don't necessarily want to buy one new off the shelf. One of the downsides of the newer ones is, as usual, you got to make some additional tweaks. They've made some upgrades to the newer versions, which require just a little bit more work. So if I could get my hands on one of the older models, that would be absolutely fantastic. So I'll be spending some time doing some research on finding the right one that I would prefer to buy at a used price, and then just doing the research. So then once I actually have the espresso machine in hand, I've kind of went through the educational side of stuff. What do I need? What am I flashing? What needs to go where? So that I would love to make, you know, some espresso from it right out of the box. And then, you know, see what that tastes like as I make those changes and I'm able to play with it, have some settings specifically for my beans, for the grind size and all of that stuff as we go along. So be expecting to hear more about espresso machines as we go through future versions of the show. Robotics has kind of come down to a slowdown as we're hitting that spring and summer season. So I will be bringing you more fun geekiness with espresso machine upgrades as soon as that happens.
So are you going to, here's the real question, is it going to run Linux? Just to annoy
me. Essentially it does. Yes. I think that the open source firmware software that they're using on this is Linux based.
So what you tell Magneto is, Magneto, it's going to be like distro hopping for the PC all over again, just on your coffee.
Every once in a while, when we go on like a day or something like that, then he will pick up a latte. He usually has me order it because he also likes the two extra shots in his. And so he's like, you know what I like, just order it. I'm not saying that list of mumbo jumbo that you guys use when ordering espresso at the coffee shop. So I don't know how much he'd actually be handling the machine. For him, you know, would usually be just a drip coffee and out the door kind of deal. So we'll see. We'll see if Magneto wants to pull espressos after the fact.
Or how frustrated he will get because you decided to change the firmware on the thing or something.
I mean, for the most part, it's pretty straightforward. Once it's done, I don't know that there'll be too much as far as upgrades go. I know one of the cool upgrades that you can do to this is you can actually add a scale to where your espresso is coming out, so you can pull shots by weight.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing all the things that can go into this. So you're basically upgrading it to like the really expensive $5,000 machines for $50 to $100, depending on whether you're going the full DIY route or you're using one of the pre-built kits. Like, you're magnifying immensely the amount of things and the amount of quality that you can get from the same espresso machine, at the same time having a base that you can keep for a very, very long time because all those parts are replaceable. Now it's your turn to toss in your two cents on today's topics. Hit the discourse forum, drop us a line under this video, or contact us by visiting tuxdigital.com/contact. If you'd like to hang out with us on our preferred social media, see the links in the show description, or find other great shows like Fit and Fueled, Destination Linux, Linux Saloon, and so much more at tuxdigital.com. Show off your love for your favorite podcasts and shows by visiting the Tux Digital Merch Store. Grab yourself some awesome swag, like the gamer-centric I paused my game to be here shirt. Matt paused his game, but we can still see that it's off to the side for him. Or join hashtag Team Wendy with some Sinister Wendy swag, which was
evil.
Not evil, but there was some live swag there at scale this year. So awesome to see that. Thank you so much. As always, we thank you for joining us. We'll be back next time with another awesome episode of Linux Out Loud. Until then, keep the banter friendly, the conversation somewhat on topic, and have fun doing it.